For much of this year, banks have been offering mortgages at historically low rates, at least to those people who qualify. But in recent weeks, rates have been climbing. And to find out why, we turn to David Wessel, as we so often do. He's economics editor of the Wall Street Journal. David, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Why are rates rising now?
Well, mortgage rates on 30-year fixed-rate mortgages have now moved a bit above 5%. That's up about from about 4.3% just 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a big difference. You know, if you have a $300,000 mortgage, that adds about $100 a month. Now, the reason this is going on is because what's going on in the bond market. Mortgage rates are tied to the rates on U.S. Treasuries, and investors are demanding higher rates on U.S. Treasuries for a number of reasons. The outlook's better, and that tends to make credit a little more pricey.
Mm-hmm.
The Fed is considered less likely to step up its efforts to keep Treasury rates down, and there's some worry about the federal deficit and the lack of a business plan to address it. So everything seems to be pushing in the same direction.
Is it oversimplifying basically to say that the federal government is just borrowing a ton of money right now, and as the economy picks up at least a little bit, there's a bit of a shortage of money, so the price of money goes up?
Exactly.
Okay. So that's the situation that's pushing rates up a little bit here. But you said just a tick over 5%. I would wager that's a lower rate than most people are paying if they've had their mortgage for several years. That's still a pretty low rate. Does it have a big effect on the housing market?
Well, actually, a lot of people are paying less than that now, because if you've bought a house in the last few years, you've had a lower rate than that, you might have, or a number of people who have equity in their houses have been able to refinance at lower rates. But basically, this doesn't help the housing market. Anytime mortgage rates go up, it makes buying a house more expensive. That makes it harder for people to buy. Fewer people buy houses. It tends to push down the price. And the housing market doesn't need any help in the pushing down the price department.
Mm-hmm.
Home prices seem to be declining again. They rose earlier after there was this tax credit to encourage home buying. That's worn off. And so it's kind of another drag on a part of the economy, which really has been a big problem.
I'm reminded here that a lot of the people who've gotten in the most trouble over the last several years are people with adjustable rate mortgages, rates that can float up and down in unpredictable ways. I suppose a lot of them must be bracing for a little extra payment, or maybe a lot of extra payment in some cases.
Well, that's right. It really depends on the exact nature of your adjustable rate mortgages. Some of the mortgages are tied to long-term treasury rates, and those are going up. Some of them are tied, though, to very short-term rates. And for now, those are rates that the Fed are keeping very low. But the bottom line is a lot of these rates are going to go up. It's just a question of how much they go up and which ones go up first.
Hasn't the Fed been trying to keep rates as low as possible to keep the economy moving?
Well, that's right. The Fed has spent $600 billion to keep long-term interest rates from rising. And it looks like that effort hasn't worked out very well. Their argument is, well, if we hadn't done all this, rates would be going even higher.
Mm.
But the fact is that this change has been surprisingly fast, and I think that's been quite difficult for some people to take. There are people who have emailed me that I had a deal to buy a house, and I thought I was going to get one mortgage rate, and now the mortgage rate's gone up a lot, so my monthly payments are going to go up more. And of course, there's a whole slew of people who are just sitting there and saying, oh gosh, I wish I'd been able to refinance when rates were at 4.3%. Now they're at 5%, and I'm never going to get a chance to refinance.
Well, what can we expect? A long-term increase in rates then?
Yes, I think the most likely direction of rates is up. It doesn't mean it'll be steady. There'll be hiccups in the market, but the era of super low mortgage rates seems to be gone for a long time.
David, always a pleasure to speak with you.
You're welcome.
David Wessel is the economics editor of the Wall Street Journal and a regular guest right here on Morning Edition.
Well, it tells us a couple things about businesses. First of all, businesses are spending a lot on equipment and software. So they're investing in things that will allow them to get more from their workforces, which is an indication that they're somewhat reluctant to hire still, but they'd rather spend things on things that get more from their existing workers. However, profits are up very sharply. They're up about 26% over the past year, which means businesses are sitting on a lot of cash, and usually when they're sitting on that much cash, they go out and hire. So I would expect that we will see businesses start to hire rapidly pretty soon with the cash that they've saved up, and they're going to find it more and more difficult to get more from their existing workers, and they're going to need to hire in order to keep up with stronger demand.
I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's Christmas Eve for those who celebrate, and today we are in the Christmas spirit. But we recognize that that spirit means different things to different people. For some people, this holiday spirit is more a feeling of sadness for all kinds of reasons, which we will talk about. One person we'll speak with, journalist Lisa Ling. Recently, she suffered a miscarriage, which, as you can imagine, made her very sad. But it also gave her the impetus to create a new virtual space where women can communicate about some of the issues that matter most. It's called the Secret Society of Women, and she'll tell us more about it in a few minutes. But first, do you mind if I ask, where are you right now? Are you headed to the mall for a few last-minute items, maybe all of your Christmas shopping? If so, you are not alone. A report by the National Retail Federation estimates that 12% of holiday shoppers still comb the stores on Christmas Eve. We asked our Tell Me More Facebook friends to share with us some of the gifts they gave or received because they procrastinated. Maynard from Norfolk, Virginia, shared this about a really pitiful gift he bought one year.
I had envisioned that I was going to buy my girlfriend a tennis bracelet around Thanksgiving. But as Christmas got closer and I had to get ready to go out of town, I had to settle for not the tennis bracelet, but the next option was a plant from the 7-Eleven. Some ants crawled out of it. The leaves had fallen off almost immediately. And it just was, it looked a lot like the Charlie Brown Christmas tree. Shortly thereafter, we were broken up.
Wonder why. We wanted to find out more about why people procrastinate and what to do if you end up on the wrong end of, say, a chia pet. So we called Timothy Pitchell, who studies procrastination. He's an associate professor of psychology at Carleton University in Ottawa. He writes the blog Don't Delay for psychologytoday.com, and he joined us from the studios of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, where we believe he arrived early for this conversation. Also with us in our Washington, D.C. studio is Lynn Bufka, a clinical psychologist. She holds a doctorate in clinical psychology, and she's assistant executive director of practice, research, and policy at the American Psychological Association. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Michelle.
So, Tim, can I start with you, Professor Pitchell, I should say. Can I start with you? What exactly is procrastination? The reason I ask is I bet there's some people who are buying gifts on the late side because they needed another paycheck, for example. They just didn't get paid on time. So what exactly defines procrastination?
That's so important because all procrastination is delay, but not all delay is procrastination. So procrastination is that voluntary delay despite knowing that this delay is going to cost you somehow. And so it's not if something else comes up that's more important. It's when we should act now, we could act now, and we choose not to act now.
Is there a little voice in their head saying, I should do this, I should do this? Or
yeah,
you mean
we're good
it's
at
a
shutting
conscious
that voice.
Thing?
It is, but we're good at shutting that voice off very quickly, so it almost feels unconscious. Because if we give in to feel good, we face something we don't want to do, we focus on short-term mood repair, and so we're pretty quick at shutting that little voice off by rationalizing it away. So sometimes people don't even experience it because they've already got these automatic habits of thought that just shut that little voice off, and then off they go on their merry way until it's too late, and then they go, why did I do this to myself again?
Lynn Bufka, do you think that holiday shopping particularly lends itself to procrastination, or are there other things? We just happen to be thinking about it right now.
I'm sure there are other things that lend themselves to procrastination, but holiday shopping is one that gets a lot of press, and people talk about it all the time, and it's easy to procrastinate. Our society has evolved so that if you want to go to the mall and stay till midnight the day before Christmas, you can. So it becomes easier and easier to delay doing something, and if you don't enjoy shopping, why do something you don't want to do? You do the things that you enjoy.
Do you think in a way we've been trained to procrastinate? Because one of the things I've observed is that the pitches for sales become more and more hysterical. Do people procrastinate in part because they're gamblers, because they're gambling, they're betting that the deal will get better?
That may play into it for some people. They may think, I'm going to get the best deals the closer I wait till Christmas, or who knows what I'm going to find if I go now, but I know the sales are going to come up, so I'm just going to wait for those.
Professor Pitchell, you write in your blog that procrastinators either overweight or underweight their tasks. What does that mean?
Well, we tend to, when we think about the future, have an optimistic bias called the planning fallacy. And so we always look at the task at hand as a singular event, like we think it's never happened before, rather than looking back at what we call distributed information about, so how did this go in the past? So we are eternally optimistic and overweighting our plans for this time and underweighting what we know from the past. And so this happens in all walks of life, but when Christmas is no different. And so we end up waiting till the last minute because we're not thinking about, oh yeah, lots of other things come up and it doesn't work as well as I think it might.
Do you have any sense of the question I asked Lynn Bufka earlier, whether more people are procrastinating now than perhaps used to because how can I put this, mechanisms to enable you that didn't exist before. I mean, back in the day, if you didn't make that pound cake, guess what? It didn't get made. But now, you know, somebody will send you one. You can order one online. You can, you know, run out to 7-Eleven or and maybe get a halfway decent cake.
Yes, and I think that plays into it. But well, there's interesting research done by Joseph Fry from DePaul University that shows that, yes, as we survey people in the malls closer and closer to Christmas, the trait procrastination scores get higher. So we do see an effect of our basic tendency to put things off. But you're absolutely right. These things make it easier to wait, and we can rationalize it away even further. And, of course, there are people who aren't procrastinating at all. They are waiting for those deals because they're happening, and they know they can make it. Your caller's instance of, you know, getting the plant instead of the tennis bracelet is the opposite of what some people do. They end up buying the much more expensive gift. My sister just told me that they ended up paying full price for an iPhone, for example, because they waited too late to get one earlier. So it can go both ways.
I think she listened to our show about buying a smartphone as a last-minute gift. I think I did that. I'm sorry. I think it's my fault. But another response from our call-out on Facebook, for example, to your point, here's Amy from Cleveland talking about a gift her boyfriend gave her last year.
I opened the first gift that he had wrapped up and realized that it was a Hickory Farms gift set with sausage and cheese in it. And it was nice. It wasn't what I was expecting. In fact, when I opened the package, I thought that it was a joke. But it was good, and I think that he just got sucked into the kiosk shopping at the mall.
To your point, you know, get that maybe that wasn't what he was planning to come up with, but he figured he'd better represent with something kind of nice. If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Tim Pitchell. He writes the blog Don't Delay for PsychologyToday.com. Also with us, Lynn Bufka, a clinical psychologist. We're talking about people who spend hours, maybe minutes today, looking for the perfect last-minute gift. Why do we do that? Why do we procrastinate? What did I just reveal here? So let us talk about, is there something that can be done about this? Let's assume that, like Professor Pitchell was saying, that this is a choice, maybe an unconscious choice or a conscious choice, but this is not a function of the fact that you just got paid, and so you really couldn't go shopping until the last minute. Setting aside the question of perhaps you could have been putting a little bit aside all along, anticipating that you weren't going to get paid until the last minute. But for some people, that really is not possible. So let's assume that this is a conscious choice and you know that this is your issue. Is there anything you can do about it? For example, Lynn Bufka, what about making a list? Does that help?
List can help, but I think one of the challenges is for most people, they aren't very conscious about the fact that they procrastinate. As Dr. Pitchell was saying, people tend to think, oh, I can get to it later. It's not something I really am that interested in doing. I have plenty of time for it. And if you wind up successfully getting your gifts in the end, you kind of think the procrastination paid off. It wasn't that big a deal. You forget about the stress, and you manage to get it done. So you never really learn from it.
Why doesn't the disappointment weigh in? In fact, I had a producer once who was constantly assigned to international stories because he was so good at it. He was a classic. He would never go shopping until the last minute. And then one year, he got sent to El Salvador at the last minute. And he came up empty on Christmas because he had not done any Christmas shopping. And I thought to myself, why do you do this to yourself? Because you know that in your line of work, this is a possibility. So that's my question. Perhaps, Professor Pitcher, you want to address it. Why doesn't the disappointment weigh in? I mean, why, you know what I mean? The idea that you might disappoint somebody, why isn't that a bigger factor?
Well, we've got this short-term gain in the delay, so it got rewarded many times. And, of course, that big disappointment you would think would be more punishing, but at the same time, he has an excuse. I got called away, and there's some understanding there. But we have these Stone Age brains in this modern world that really is hooked on short-term gain, and so we're always looking at immediate mood repair. And so that's why when you talk about what can we do about it, my mantra is just get started. We know from our own research that a task begun is a task half done. A little progress fuels motivation. And so it really comes down to exerting just a little bit of self-control to just get started. And then we see that we've primed the pump because it is aversive. And for many people, at least, it is, because you might fear you can't get the perfect gift. It's kind of an ought task rather than an ideal self working there. So if you could just get started, we often find that this isn't so bad, and off we go.
Give us a tip here that we can take away with this. Just get started. Just
Well, that's my mantra that way, is to just get started, because in all our tasks, you know, it comes down to the exertion of will. We can try to trick ourselves into things, but another thing I would say is we'd make an implementation intention rather than just a vague goal intention of, I'm going to get my Christmas shopping done. You would say, at time X, I'll do behavior Y. After work on Tuesday, I'll go straight to this store and buy a certain gift. Now, what happens is what that signals to you, after work, it comes to mind, oh, yes, I said I was going to do something. I'm going to go to this store. Because now you've put the cue for the behavior into the environment, and that helps break habits. And that's a very powerful technique that Peter Galowitz has shown through repeated research will help us act on our intentions.
Okay. And so, you know, I have to ask, is all your shopping done, Professor Pitchell?
Yes, it was done. And I used a strategy there. My wife and I take a weekend. We go away together and we do all our shopping at one time, and we also make it a little holiday. So we've learned to mix some fun into it, and that makes it so we're not just running from store to store to store, fitting it into other times.
Show off. What about you, Lynn Bufka? Are you done?
Mine is done, but my husband's is not.
Oh, well, okay. Maybe we'll give him a little push. Okay. Lynn Bufka is a clinical psychologist and assistant executive director of practice, research, and policy at the American Psychological Association. She was here with me in our Washington, D.C. studio. Tim Pitchell is an associate professor of psychology at Carleton University in Ottawa, where he specializes in the study of procrastination. And as he told us, he's done. Thank you both for being with us, and happy holidays to you both.
Thank you. Happy holidays to you.
Thank you, Michelle. Merry Christmas.
And now it's time for Faith Matters. That's the part of the program where we talk about matters of faith and spirituality. And as we noted earlier, it is Christmas Eve, and for those who observe, it is meant to be a joyous time of the year, filled with gifts and food and holiday parties, all the things that, as the song says, make the season bright. But for many people, the holidays come with anxiety, maybe even sadness. This year, many people are struggling with financial problems and others are dealing with loss. So because this is the season of hope, we thought we'd call upon two faith leaders for their perspective on the holiday blues. The Very Reverend Samuel Lloyd is Dean of the Washington National Cathedral here in Washington, D.C. He joins us here in our Washington, D.C. studio. Also with us from member station KPFT in Houston, Texas, is Pastor Rudy Rasmus. He is the senior pastor of St. John's Downtown. That's a church he co-pastors with his wife, Pastor Juanita. And, of course, he joined us very frequently in the past to talk about ethical issues, and so we're pleased to have him with us once again. Welcome to you both. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be with
Thanks
you, Michelle.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
So, Dean Lloyd, as we mentioned, it can be a tough time of year for many people, particularly in this economy. Often there's a lot of emphasis on gifts and giving. And so for a lot of people, that can be particularly challenging. And according to a recent American Psychological Association survey this year, 61% of Americans cite a lack of money as their top holiday stressor. So I'd like to ask you, are you hearing that from the people with whom you deal?
I sure am. And you know, I have a dear friend who's a therapist who says Christmas in general is the most emotionally loaded time of the whole year. So we start off with a big overlay of expectations about what Christmas is supposed to be and how we're supposed to behave and what kinds of presents we're supposed to give and what kinds we're supposed to get. So that's a huge load we're carrying anyway. Then you put in the thick of that what has happened to the economy, what's happened to people who've lost their jobs, and trying to figure out how do they somehow express the love they want to give to the people they care about when their resources are so limited and they're feeling so stretched and pressed. It's a tough time.
It's a tough time also for, I think, many of the people who are on the other end of that unemployment. Sorry, often we talk a lot about the people who've lost their jobs, but then there's also the stress of people who had to be the bearer of that news. And I'm wondering whether you've experienced that yourself at the Washington National Cathedral. But are you hearing also from employers, for example, who are feeling guilt about having to let people go at a difficult time of year or throughout the year,
sure,
for that matter?
Absolutely. And it's been true at the cathedral when we've had to, in the past couple of years, let some people go. You know you are inflicting significant pain and struggle on people whom you care about, and there's a little bit of a survivor guilt. I still got my job and others don't. So one of the questions they want to ask the church is, how can we here at the cathedral make some response even when this isn't happening to us? We see it happening all around us.
And Pastor Rudy, the same question to you. You're the pastor of a very large church in Houston, and you know you have wildly varying circumstances there. What are you hearing from people?
We are right now seeing an alarming increase in young men and women
who are now on the streets, which is also a byproduct of the breakdown in the economy, families no longer being able to keep it together. And absolutely, we have seen it across the board. Now, from an employee standpoint, it's been very difficult through this current economic time to really just maintain. People are having to decide between going to church on Sunday or using that gas to get to work on Monday. It's really a challenging time for the faith communities that provide services to people in need. And it's been really tough.
What do you have to say to people who are facing such a challenge?
You know, one thing I'm helping people to understand is that we really do have to manage our expectations in and around the holiday season. Something my family and I did maybe 5 years ago or so, we just stopped exchanging gifts and started really focusing on each other.
Oh, what about you, Reverend Lou? What is your word of hope to people, or comfort to people who are so distressed at a time like this, particularly for the for their economic circumstances, which may be very new for some people? What's your word?
One of the things that we talk a lot about is how the story of Christmas is really the story of God becoming poor. The fundamental story is God chose to come to be born to a small family in a backwater part of the world, drifting with the powers of the Roman Empire, shifting them around, trying to make their own life, overwhelmed by what was happening to them, not knowing how this was all going to turn out, confused by these divine messengers telling them things that were going on. So to feel overwhelmed and out of place and even marginalized is to know something of what the Christmas story is really all about.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with the Very Reverend Samuel Lloyd and Pastor Rudy Rasmus. We're talking about people who may have the holiday blues. There are two faith leaders, and we're getting their perspective on this issue. I just want to play a short clip now from a young man named Ernest Champel. He's a journalist living in L.A. When we knew we were having this conversation, so we kind of put the word out on Facebook to say, gee, you know, are other people experiencing this? What's on your mind that you might like to pose a question to our two guests? And this is what Ernest Champel had to say. He's just gone through a breakup, and this is very much on his mind right now, and I'm sure this is something that a lot of people are experiencing. So here it is.
This year, it kind of hit me because I think I don't have that special someone anymore, and that's been tough on me, and I'm looking for someone to help me move forward mentally because it's all in my head. It's not only in my head, it's in my heart also. I feel it physically. It's a physical pain, which is the worst thing.
So, Pastor Rudy, I'll start with you. I'm sure you've heard this before. There are people who've suffered various losses at this time of year, and for some reason it feels particularly painful at this time of year. What would you say to Ernest?
You know, the first thing I would suggest Ernest do is make a list of what he does have, you know, focusing on the bounty of really blessings, for the lack of a better word. I would doubt if this young man is completely alone.
Reverend Lloyd, what do you think?
The key thing to do is to know that you aren't alone, as Pastor Rudy says, and to take some initiative and responsibility for stepping out. That's what church communities are for at this time of the year.
So finally, Dean Lloyd, if you don't mind my asking, I think you'll be preaching this weekend.
I will.
Can we tempt you to give us a little preview of what your message might be?
The big picture, especially for a time like this, is that the amazing story Christians have to tell is that the Creator of the universe decided to come and live our lives with us. And so my challenge always in Christmas sermons is both to cherish this beautiful story of what happened once, but to be on the lookout for where Christ is being born. And you better look in the poor places and the struggling places for the surest signs of where Christ is going to be.
Pastor Rudy, what about you? Can we tempt you to give us a little bit of a preview of what you'll be preaching this weekend?
I'm just encouraging our community to find a need out here and begin to work on filling that need, which will immediately eliminate us focusing on our own needs.
Pastor Rudy Rasmus is the senior pastor of St. John's Downtown. That's a church he co-pastors with his wife, Juanita. It's in Houston, Texas. He joined us from member station KPFT in Houston. Here with us in Washington, D.C., the Very Reverend Samuel Lloyd. He's dean of the Washington National Cathedral. And I thank you both so much for joining us, and Merry Christmas to you both.
Thank you, Michelle. Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you too, Michelle.